Blog Talk Radio.
I can do it. I'll go.
I'll go. You stay and see what you can do with this.
Oh, it's coming on. It's coming. Hi there. Welcome to Blog Talk. Ralph Pointer, what's happening? I'm going to do a systems check here. As I said, we've got a new setup in the office. Sister Ann, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, fabulous. Okay, so you know tonight we are saying capitalism means first national bank gets bailed out and the homeless get bailed out.
Get put out.
Get put out. Pardon me, I'm still a little shaky from fighting with the internet. But what we are hoping is that tonight everybody will try to give us some kind of update and report on what's happening where they are. But before we start, Ralph, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. And one more time, welcome to the home of technical difficulties. But as we say, capitalism means First National Bank is bailed out, the homeless get put out. And our mission is to explore into what is real and what is imagined. While democracy is imagined, capitalism is imagined. But what is real is what we have said. First National Bank gets bailed out. The homeless get put out. That is real. And our mission to explore this reality goes deep. And our mission is as important and as dangerous as the mission for justice has ever been. As you know, people who called in on this program have a history of fighting for justice. I'm not talking about 5 years, 10 years, 15. I'm talking about a lifetime. People who call in on this program have been in the death camps for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And so what we're doing is trying to give our best interpretation for people to understand where they are and what it means. And more important than that, what we can do about it. Now, to begin with, we always open up with poetry, but Professor Louis of Victor Lewis is in the house, and I was going to talk about his history, but I guess I will have to save that for next week's program, along with poetry of Victor Lewis, Professor Louis. And so let us begin. And what we want to talk about is the new forms of paper that are being used on Wall Street to buy and sell, which keeps people poor, makes rich people rich, because when they make a mistake with these forms of paper, when these hedge funds make a mistake, the government bails them out. Now, we talked about one particular form government bailout where government put money up so that people in trailer parks could borrow money and live, elders who could not afford rent and housing could live a better. And so we find some company fills out a form, buys up trailer parks, and doubles the rent. They have low interest on the notes that the government had set out to make it more affordable for elderly people to live, cheaper in trailer parks. And as it turns out, it doubles. It hurts the people. We see this same form of new paper that the government sells so-called to relieve the pressure on hospitals. We see one gentleman bought 20 hospitals with these government money, closed four of them, gave himself a $93 million a year paycheck, and he's home free. And I ask people who are more knowledgeable than I in the business of companies and corporations, I said, do they write these bills, these government bills with so many holes in them that the wealthy can take advantage of them and the rest of us are punished by them? How are we punished by them? My brothers and sisters, with every bailout, and this is conclusion and what I have to say, with every bailout, the money that you had yesterday to buy services with buys fewer services today. That same money is cheapened. When the government printed money in the, now I'm going to use this word, in the defense of Iraqi freedom. That's a joke. There was no defense of Iraqi freedom. Saddam Hussein was a CIA puppet. He was put there to overturn the democracy that was in Iraq. And he did his job. And then when his job was over, they kicked him out. We paid for that because when they put pallets of $100 bills to be taken off of these transports, these large transports, and the money disappeared, the company that was involved, supposedly to trace that money, quit. There was so much corruption, they wanted to have nothing to do with it. But what it meant to you and I was that the government printed money and our dollars keep going down in value in terms of what they buy every day. That's the conclusion. The rich get richer, they get more of it, and our money buys less in terms of services. And so our mission, as I say to you, is as important and as dangerous as in any period of American history to try to get justice, because all of the elements of injustice in America are still with us. The young man gets murdered on the subway. And what was he doing? The least aggressive form of communication of all. That is, if you don't include Colin Kaepernick of taking a knee, not saying anything, taking a knee, in opposition to what was going on. And then one of the Supreme Court justices says, the darling of the left says, oh, that's wrong, taking a knee. Well, it continues. A young man, a Michael Jackson impersonator. Michael Jackson, wonderful artist, wonderful genius. Whatever his frailties and his problems are, he was a genius. And anyone who's seen a Michael Jackson performance or an impersonator, it gets joy. And he shouted out, I'm hungry. I am sick. I am homeless. And he gets murdered. What does that mean? Well, to me, the first thing that what meant to me was there no one on that train who had the courage to say, leave him alone, or kick that person who was attacking him while he was on the floor? You didn't have to be able to be Muhammad Ali or George Foreman, put a foot in his mouth while he was killing a young man. And then that brings us to the Black Lives Matter. What was that about? The young woman who took the photo of the police, Southern police, armed police, killing him. And she cried and said, this was all I could do. What are people thinking tonight? Well, that tells me nothing has changed. And we are doing the same thing. We are pointing this out. We are separating the real from the imagined. And I'm just wondering what goes through your mind when you see the large lines of people immigrating to or attempting to migrate to America, which we had discussed on programs before, saying, why is it that America attacks every problem from the wrong end? Why are people coming here? Because of imperialism. America has gone to their country, stolen the resources. How do they steal the resources? They support corrupt leaders. Banana republics, we all know what that means. Kill people, destroy institutions, to bring the wealth of foreign nations here to build an economy, a capitalist economy that is capitalist for the poor and socialist for the rich, because the rich cannot lose. because they play with the money at the top while they suck the resources out of the economy that the rest of us struggle to live in. And so in conclusion, what do you think when you see the people coming here to get what was stolen from their country? And I hear some of these terrible liberals, and I call them terrible liberals, to say they're coming here to get away from the drug wars. What simpletons with simple, erroneous ideas as to what the problem is. Drugs are not happy. They are not positive. Drugs did not cause the problem. Drugs are not creating the problem. Drugs are not continuing the problem because this is a drug nation. Now what we know, we look back to heroin and cocaine as the good old days. What do we get now? We get fentanyl and beyond. And beyond that, there's another beyond. The chemicals are made here. And if they're not made here, they're made other places. And so it gets worse as the time goes by. And we struggle in our own lives to exist in this corrupt society. We see all of the evils that have been present in American society present today. They have a new form of blockbusting. We call it ethnic cleansing or gentrification. And then that gets sophisticated within the blocks, busting the blocks, government corruption. Well, I've spoken long enough. And if Professor Louis gives us one more week, as Sister Betty says he has given us one more week, Professor Louis, your microphone is open. Educate and entertain us.
Before we go to Professor Louis, I just want to make you aware that public housing leaders, people who advocate for public housing, don't trust the Preservation Trust Privatization Bill, where they're trying to raise funds to prevent NYCHA housing, that is what some people call the project, from being privatized. So in the midst of this young man being lynched because he was housingless, here we have the city trying to go full steam ahead with a proposal which would create, so they claim, a nonprofit preservation trust transferring entire housing developments out of their current federal Section 9 program into Section 8-based vouchers supervised, and this is the critical word, supervised under private management.
Privatization of education, public education, was a fundamental of the so-called American democratic system, so-called. Privatization is creeping everywhere, and my brothers and sisters, we must fight it, explain it, because it is as dangerous as any other form of oppression. The oppression that they have taken to the world, imperialism, they're bringing it home to the rest of us. Privatization.
And I want to continue and conclude by saying, when you understand that one of the phrases this young man used was, I'm hungry, I'm sick, I'm homeless, and I don't even care if I end up in jail. That's how desperate he was.
And it cost him his life. And I guess it cost us the life of all of us, because if we go somewhere and our so-called brothers and sisters do not come to our aid when we are accosted, attacked for no reason at all, then none of us are safe. And those old words of all of us or none of us go out the window. Those old words are, you are your brother's keeper, go out the window. We are out there playing Russian roulette when we allow our kids to go to the street. And as a friend of mine said many, many years ago, if you let them get down to the street, they could lose their life. If you keep them at home, they don't have a life. And so, my brothers and sisters, we continue to struggle with your help, telling it like it is, what's happening, and trying to do something about it. Sister Betty.
And to conclude, what everybody here who's a true New Yorker knows, there is no housing or apartment shortage in New York City. The city is warehousing apartments by the thousands. And I know everybody on this call understands what I am saying when I say warehousing. I know everybody on this call and listening to this broadcast knows what I mean when I say that they will be allegedly raising funds, these new privatized houses, for the repairs. We know that once it's privatized, the repairs will be even worse than what they are now under NYSHA with federal control. So if you put this within the context of this young man and the new mayor giving billions to people coming over here from the Ukraine, this is why we say stop the wars abroad, stop the wars at home. Let the Ukrainians stay in their houses where they were not homeless, and let our people have the right as citizens to their own homes, which are being warehoused. So without further ado, thank you for your patience this evening with our technical difficulties. But tonight is an important night, and we know all of you are working on something to try to make it better. Professor Louis, your mic is open.
Some steal a little and some steal a lot. Steal it when you're looking and they steal it when you're not. Cops steal a little. Politicians steal a lot. They got their real estate stealing your block, doing anything to keep themselves on top. They're stealing, stealing, stealing everything you got. You know what happens when you go to the store. Check the prices, you've been robbed some more. It's not the little guy who owns the place. The big corporations are in your face. General Electric, Scott, Johnson & Johnson, Kodak, Ford, Kraft, and Exxon. They make every little bitty thing you buy. They make your coffin on the day you die. Then they steal the factory and send it away to some little country where they pay less pay, ripping other people off. What else is news? Making cheap junk that we got to use because what they send back here, we got to buy. And they couldn't care less if you live or die because they make it for a little, they sell it for a lot. They're stealing, stealing, stealing everything you got. Meanwhile, back on the block, you got a guy that you never forgot. It's the landlord stealing from you every month. He got your money and he's out to lunch and the dollars that you give him go to pay for his mortgage each and every day. So you buy the building, you buy it for him. Meantime, you could sink or swim with the rats, the roaches, the leak upstairs. Tell him about it, and he just don't care because he raises the rent till you can't pay, and the building goes co-op one fine day for $2 million you ain't got. You're living in a shelter if you like it or not. He's blowing fancy coke, smoking high-priced pot, stealing, stealing, stealing everything you got. And if you got work every day, they're stealing your labor in every way. Because the company's making money, but you don't get a cent, a little chump change. You wonder where it went, and the owner in the gym taking a swim, living off the money you made for him. Because he pays you a little, but he pays himself a lot. He's stealing, stealing, stealing everything you got. And the real estates are doing pretty good. They steal your whole damn neighborhood. Co-ops, condos, selling fast. $2 million, get them while they last. If you don't got the money, get out on your ass, because the neighborhood is going, going, going right past, and they'll leave you laying in the street to rot, stealing, stealing, stealing everything you got. Poor people rob you with a knife or a gun, climb in your window when you're not at home. But rich people steal everything sooner or later, steal it with a pen and a piece of paper. They steal it when you're living, steal it when you die. They steal it from you with a suit and a tie. There's a punky little junkie down on the block stealing to forget all the things he's not. But it's the great big, great big, big, big money. Steal a whole world. It's not even funny. They steal the mayor sitting in his chair. They steal that building right over there. They steal the news on TV. They steal the judge and the jury and all the people who sit at the top. Salute the flag. Big patriot. Think about it if you like it or not. They're stealing, stealing, stealing everything you got. They rob us where we live, rob us where we work, put on your TV and they treat you like a jerk. You might be bad. You might be tough. By yourself, they just mess you up. But there's millions of people, you and I, living day to day under the sky. And night to night, we got a little dream. We just want to live like human beings, fine and mellow, no muss, no fuss, without these greedy people all stealing from us. Because some steal a little and some steal a lot. Steal it from the bottom and they give it to the top. They stole it from your mama and they stole it from your pop. Stealing, stealing, stealing everything you got.
Well, Professor Louis, Professor Louis, Professor Louis, I was going to open the program singing your praises, but you opened the program wonderfully, saying it all, like I say, with entertaining and educational at the same time. Enjoy your vacation, because you give us a vacation every time you speak. Thank you again, Professor Louis. Sister Betty.
All right, as always, we are honored to have Richard Wright's daughter in the house, and we try to take her because where she is, it's close to 2 a.m. in the morning, and the link sometimes goes in and out, and since we've been having trouble with our internet connection for the last couple of days, we want to be sure that we are not responsible for the time running out on her link. So before we go for our normal Jericho update, we want to try and open up the mic for Comrade Sister Julia Wright. And welcome back once again. We're honored by your presence.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear.
Wonderful. I'm glad to be with you. I have some words from Che Guevara for you tonight. It is the hour of the furnaces. We only see the light. And I love those words because we are indeed surrounded by darkness. So such words help. Also, summer is coming, and we know about the freedom summers. So I wrote a poem called Freedom Summertime. If I were given the gift of a time machine and the opportunity to choose at what point in our Black history I would wish to travel and land, I would elect to stay in the here and now of the struggle to free our elder and teacher, Mumia Abu-Jamal. If I were given the gift of a time machine, I would program it to alight in the ground zero of Wee Lawnee, where torch spirits smile down from the canopy of each saved tree. If I were given the gift of a time machine, I would make sure it flies me to the West Coast time zone to visit the oldest political prisoner ever known, Rochelle Magee, whose narratives of slave rebellions would really and truly transport me. If I were given the gift of a time machine, I would keep it oiled, but I would leave it behind in the trenches and save history time coding to another day, because now is the splendor of freedom summertime to be seized.
Wow. Thank you. Continue, please.
I just wanted to say that indeed, these are wonderful moments we are living in. I think that there's much potential, and I'll just give you three examples of moments that we are close to that are full of potential, I believe. paradoxically, I believe that when Judge Clemens said no to Mumia, she kicked a hornet's nest because there followed thereupon the UN Emler's hearing whereby our political prisoners gained an international platform. And that was a beautiful answer to Judge Clemens' no. I will speak more about that perhaps another time.
Well, thank you for that offering. Let us hope that it was a clarion call for those around the world to look at America's injustice done to the descendants of the African captives and the struggle that we are waging for liberation for all, because this is a moment in history that we must push aside all the falsities of race, integration, the nonsense of reparations, the things that they say that we can look to achieve when we have to stop them from continuing stealing from us and the rest of the world daily. Then, and only then, can we speak of reparations other than historical memory, not as a reality that something will be given back. Nothing is ever given back. It must be taken, and we must elevate our minds to taking our justice daily. That is the ability to go to a Subway and do a Michael Jackson performance safely. Knowledge that those around us understand justice and we do no harm, but as St. Augustine says, we have no right to see harm done to others without acting. Sister Betty.
Again, I want to thank Comrade Julia for joining us this evening. We appreciate her expertise. We appreciate her devotion to the cause. Without further ado, we're going to resume our usual format. Sister Ann, are you still in the house with us?
No, I'm still here. Couldn't be anywhere else on this.
Mike, you, a little bit, we can't hear you that well. You could speak up into your mic.
Is it better? Can you hear me better now? I can hear you really well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I will speak forcefully. One thing that's happening that I think is very important that we should all remember and always commemorate is May 15th, which is the 75th anniversary of the Nakba in Palestine, which I think most people remember in 1948, how the Palestinians were evicted from their land and massacred. And amazingly, for the first time ever, the United Nations is having a whole event on May 15th at the UN about the Nakba. And, of course, two countries already boycotting this effort, which is the Zionist entity and its sponsor, the United States. So very interesting that that is happening actually at the UN. I know that people are also planning to be at Dag Hammarskjöld outside on Monday. And also on Saturday, there's a demonstration in Brooklyn, in a Palestinian neighborhood there where they're always doing stuff. So I was trying to find the email that had all the details, and I couldn't find it, but I did find the UN link. So that looks wonderful. And I really wanted to thank Comrade Julia for mentioning once again the longest held political prisoner in the world, Rochelle McGee, because he certainly is. And he should have been freed a long, long time ago, along with everybody else. So as people know, but just to remind everybody, we are keeping up the heat, as we call it, on Omaha for Ed Poindexter, who has been in prison for 52 years for a crime he totally did not commit, totally framed up by COINTELPRO, he and his partner, originally known as David Rice, known to all of us as Mondo Ewen Wilanga, a great poet and artist in his own right. And if you go to the JerichoMovement.com, in case you don't know too much about Ed Poindexter, you should read his bio. It is amazing the amount of stuff that he has been able to accomplish inside the death camps. It's really, really incredible. All the people that he's mentored, the radio program that he had. He's also a musician. You know, it's really, really amazing. But we're encouraging everybody to please keep those calls coming in. We want to keep the heat on them to release him to hospice care with his family. That is the demand. And we do have, he does have a whole legal team working on this as well. But while they're doing their part, we need to do our part. And the other person that we are also waging a campaign for at the moment is Sinachli, also known as Alvaro Luna Hernandez. And he's also like a quite famous guy. If you go to freealvaro.net and you read his bio, you will be amazed at all the things that he has done. Because he was doing all these things in the community, that's why he became a target of the government. You know, we can't have these brown people going around, you know, trying to have justice. Heaven forbid. So, you know, I mean, he supposedly menaced a sheriff. And I fail to understand how menacing a sheriff gets you 50 years in prison. But it is Texas, so we have to understand that. Anyway, those are two campaigns that, you know, we're really encouraging people to do. Alvaro has already written, Sinachli has already written to the Justice Department, to Biden, you know, saying, look, this is like a total violation of our human rights. We're surrounded by these white supremacists. White supremacists in the prison as incarcerated people, and they have white supremacists running the prison as CEOs and wardens. So, you know, you can imagine, you know, what the black and brown prisoners are suffering every day. So, you know, it's very important that people pay attention, you know, these gulags that we have in this country and these death camps. You know, it's like a famous writer once said, if you want to know what a society is really about, go to its prisons, and then you'll see what a society is really about. So I have been to those prisons, and I could tell you this society is really about cruelty, inhumanity, fascism, racism, all the isms. You know, it's just horrible. So I would really encourage people, you know, to please, please take the time. These people have sacrificed entire lifetimes for us. We could certainly take the time to make a phone call or send an email or fax a fax. It doesn't take much. And then don't forget about the Nakba. I will be putting out information on this as soon as I find the detailed email once again that had a list of all events all over the world. And also Representative Talib, she's been getting a lot of heat because she is sponsoring a Nakba event in D.C. So, you know, the AIPAC and all those folk are after her now. So we have to really pay attention because we should really be inspired by the Palestinians. You know, they are really amazing. They have been doing this for years and years and years, and they have not stopped, and they have not given up, and they will continue to fight until they get their land back. And we should appreciate and admire that and try to imitate it and be like them and not stop until we achieve what we want to achieve, which is free all our political prisoners now.
Well, thank you so much for Ann Lamb. And as I say over and over again, my book of religion, my book of justice is the Jericho website, because that book represents how we must act, because life is what we do every day, how we react to the injustices. And talking about injustices at home as well as injustices abroad, we have 1405. Lisa Davis, your microphone is open. Speak to us as the injustice.
Uhuru. And hello.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. And I just want to say I was listening so intently. There's so much that could be said about everything that you all have just talked about. But I'm just going to mention a couple of things because I know a lot of people want to also get on with announcements and their contributions to these very important topics. There will be a very important Hands Off Uhuru mass meeting. These involve the mass meetings of people organizing to fight back and to expose the corrupt U.S. government, the Biden administration. We got to really tie this to the Democrats because they're the ones in power that are doing this right now. And so they're going to have a Hands Off Uhuru meeting on Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I believe that Saturday is the 13th. Is it? Yes, this Saturday, the 13th, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please go to Hands Off Uhuru. That's U-H-U-R-U, handsoffuhuru.org. And then also on Sunday, there's going to be the second annual Black Mother's Day March sponsored by African National Women's Organization, which is also a part of the Uhuru movement. And they are challenging the kidnapping and the abuse of Black families by the so-called Child Protective Services system. And when you think about it, the system that was imprisoning, enslaving Black children, lynching them, hanging them, and that made going to school illegal for them is now the same system that's in charge of protecting our children. And we cannot have that because we know that does not work. Black people are perfectly capable of controlling our own lives, our own destiny, setting up our own rules. We are the ones who can protect our children, and we need to do that free of colonialism. And these are just some of the things I can think of right now in terms of announcements. And I just wanted to say one thing pertaining to, the horror that happened on the subway system, the ones that we know about. But I can just tell you right now from somebody who commutes back and forth to New York all the time, we know there are no services. There's no help for people who need help. And in them stations, on them train platforms, all they do is criminalize every aspect of the existence of an unhoused person. And you see nothing but signs. Like when I'm in New York Penn Station, I see nothing but signs literally criminalizing everything a person does. Like you can be criminally prosecuted for sitting in the waiting room without a ticket. You can be criminally prosecuted for that. You can be criminally prosecuted for sitting on the stairs. You can be criminally prosecuted for panhandling, for asking for money, anything you can be criminally prosecuted for, but there are never any signs about where a person can go if they need help. And this is New York, New Jersey, train stations, bus stations, airports, it doesn't matter, you know. And it's, you know, just a situation that should have never happened. And I also say, how did you can strangle somebody for 15 minutes on a subway and there's no MTA officials that are there to stop it?
And there are no people, as we say. Where are those who brag of the Judeo-Christian heritage that does not exist? We forget all of the things that we speak of. The things that we say we are proud of are becoming myths, the way that things should be, but the way that they are not. Thank you so much for that, Lisa Davis.
Thank you.
Movement. Sister Betty.
Before we come back to summarizing the topic for tonight's program, we have a few guests on tonight. I think those of you recognize the fact that Comrade Sayedo is not with us this evening. He is undergoing some medical procedures. For those of you who have spiritual connections to the universe, send out some support to him. Hopefully he will be able to join us again soon. But at this time, we have people who listen but who've also in the past made some memorable comments. So I just want to say the first three numbers are 948, and the last four digits are 0264. Did you feel like making some comments tonight on anything that is of concern to you?
Black power, black power.
Okay. We could
black power. I wanna say something. I want us to recognize one of our prisoners that's in prison, and his name is Dr. Mordecai C. Europe. He's been in prison for 21 years. He's innocent, and they haven't let him out yet. That's our master teacher, Dr. Mordecai C. Europe. And I'm going to say, black power, by any means necessary, let's fight the power for our people by any means necessary.
Well, thank you. You've made that clear, because one of the things that we're coming to recognize is power is gained by the way power has been lost. There has been a war against us. There's a war against the poor. And we must take that philosophy to react to war with war against our oppressors in any and every form that we can muster. Economic war, as we saw in Tulsa and other places, and we have to protect that economic success. What's the way that success is protected? We cannot turn our back on any form of resistance. Sister Betty.
All right. I want to thank you so much for getting on tonight. Is there a contact information, like a number of a prison authority that you want people to call in terms of this political prisoner?
I get back with you on that. I get it to our brother Osayo, and then I get it back to you. Or I'll call your number and give you the information.
Okay, or you can text it to me as well. And thank you for making us aware of that. We got another warrior in the house who thinks, and we want to open up his mic. I've been anticipating him all evening. Brother Henry Hagan, your mic is open, and thank you for waiting so patiently.
Thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph, and all of our supporters and contributors tonight. I just wanted to recap this review of Patrice Lumumba from last week, and I left off with Juliana Lumumba, daughter of Patrice Lumumba, under the auspices of New York City's Patrice Lumumba Coalition, led by the venerable Ilambe Brass. This was in the late 70s or early 80s. And he invited her to address the Harlem community via the Abyssinia Baptist Church. And the remarkable thing is that this was years after the atrocity itself, but you could still visibly see the pain and sadness that lingered in her eyes and her face. Members of the audience paid their respects to her as they shook her hand in compassion and deep respect. She had also petitioned the awful Belgian government to return her father's remains in the subsequent years after his horrible demise. Dismembered, she was unable to recover the dislodged tooth of his for ceremonial burial by her devastated family after numbers of years of trying to do so. He'd been brutally dismembered and buried. Other significant gestures honoring Patrice Lumumba include the former Soviet Union having named a university after him. Cuba named a sugar processing plant in his honor. Interestingly enough, Ukraine named a highway after him. And Che and a group of Cuban volunteers after the overthrow of Lumumba went to the Congo to rally support and the logistics for those loyal to Patrice Lumumba. And Che fought in Africa, and that's something that is remarkable in and of itself, given the shortened time span that he had to accomplish so much. Just very quickly, there are some movies and books that are remarkable in that they lend itself to giving us new dimensions about Patrice Lumumba. He himself was a very brilliant man and could exist on a few hours sleep per night. There's also the classic Lumumba by Raoul Peck that was released around the year 2000, A Season in the Congo by Aimé Césaire, Death of a Prophet, it was a 1991 documentary, Congo, My Country, May Our People Triumph by Patrice Lumumba, The Black Handbook, Lion of the Congo, and PLO Lumumba, Wikipedia. And that is something that when you look at the biographical information on Patrice, it's overwhelming. There are numerous books written to characterize and explain this brilliant man who was brutally removed from us by both Belgium and the United States. And we should honor Patrice Lumumba henceforward because he was somebody who fought for our independence and dignity.
Well, thank you so much for that, Henry Higgins. Sister Betty.
Okay, we have two other people before we make an announcement. 7785, did you want to make a comment? We've had some unusual circumstances, and I know there's a lot of organizing going on all over the place. Did you feel like you wanted to make a comment? If not, we will move on.
Yes, I'll make a quick comment. First of all, all the information and the words, both historical and what's happening right now, is always so not only enlightening but energizing, and that's what we need. We need information and understanding, but we need the energy to take that information and to take that these issues of injustice and of oppression and put it into resistance, put it into action, because that's the only thing that's going to change. The only thing that will bring change is resistance and action on the part of us, not only the activists, but the people as a whole. We have to keep on mobilizing. We have to keep on educating, informing, and we have to keep on acting. And I hope to have a little bit more, perhaps, positive information in the weeks ahead on my own circumstances and situation. But with that, as always, let me end by saying, free them all.
That's the call, free them all. Thank you so much for that. And one of the things that I think about, we of the new abolition are informed and driven by the reality of the original abolitionists in America, and we call that the high point in American history, and it has not been discovered as of now. That is the cooperation between people of the world, people who understand the humanity of others without regard to race, religion, age, gender, etc. And we will continue that struggle as historians delve into these individual heroic moments of those, the abolitionists, and the history of the abolition struggle and how it relates to the struggle today. And one of the things that, like I chuckle and say, Americans always go after the problem from the wrong end. We talk about immigration without talking about imperialism. As an immigrant once said to me, "Do you think I want to leave my beautiful land for this cold, heartless country? I come here because I'm forced to come here to get a little of the resources of my country that was stolen and brought here for the advantage of the wealthy and the crumbs of the tables of the wealthy are for the rest of us, and they have come for the crumbs which there were no crumbs in their country, because the United States, the CIA, and the various instruments, the army of occupations, come and destroy other countries. So people are forced to come here. And, of course, being of African descent, I'm aware of what happens in African countries. They didn't give us the opportunity to say, no, I don't want to go. We were brought here. That's another story that we won't go into. But one of the things I'd like to just touch on this evening, when I say, how do we get these false narratives to work towards? I remember in the 50s and the 60s, people were saying integration, but there were those intelligent people saying, what are you talking about? We have to control where we are. Way before the 60s, when some of our brilliant people of the past said, I don't have to sit beside someone white to learn anything. This was the early 1900s, and people knew that that was not a solution, but their voices were drowned out. The move to the suburbs, I called them 1949 Negroes, those who figured all they had to do was live next door to someone white and everything would be okay. And I say, how do we get this disinformation constantly in every period? And I remember in the 50s when Patrice Lumumba made a speech in the Congo, how it excited many of us in America. But at the same time, there were many of those who pretended to be our friends were saying, don't you understand, we need Mobutu. And I think back and I says, public arguments that I would have, and I says, what do you mean, Mobutu? And they would say, well, there's this gentleman, Kasavubu, who wants to do good for the Congolese. And I remember the name Bishop Miseruwu. All of these puppets, how did their names come before us in this here America, in these discussions, and basically almost to fistfights? And I would say, what in hell are you talking about? What did Kasavubu or Mobutu say? They said they would follow the French leadership. And the French leadership was imperialism. How did that benefit the people of the Congo and Africa? And Sister Betty wanted to chime in on this. Sister Betty.
Well, actually, I just wanted to pick up on 2 points before we have to leave. We've got just a few moments left before we leave for this evening. I want to call your attention to the New York City Jericho website. There's an article, Jordan Neely Was Lynched. It is a must read. It was by Laura Witt Prism. And she said, we must resist the white supremacist narrative that blame Jordan Neely and absolve white vigilanteism and the systemic violence of the state. A white man lynched Jordan Neely on the floor of a subway in New York City on Monday. And this is the truth. And if we don't face the truth, we won't come up with the correct solution to the problem. In addition to that, I want to call your attention to the fact that you must put May 13th, please excuse me, in your calendars, because on May 13th, there will be a conference. It's called the LCIP National Conference. This is a conference where, if you've been listening very closely to what Sister Lisa has been telling you, you will build an independent working class party and break the grip of the two-party system. Saturday, May 13th, and if you Google LCIP Conference, you can click and register. Finally, I want to remind you that tomorrow night we are preempted for fundraising purposes, and we will not be on WBAI. But you must join us next Wednesday because we are going to have the people from Chicago back again talking hard strategies for how we must organize. They have successfully organized the union, and they put a mayor in. They have a union for the homeless, and they put a mayor in. And I want to thank everybody that was on tonight who accommodated us with our problems with the technology. Brother Ralph?
Yes, and always watch out for where these false narratives of success, where our directions go. Who comes up with this nonsense? And we will be discussing that on future programs. Thank you, my brothers and sisters.
Also, I want to remind you that there will be, as I said, no program for WBAI next week. Thank you.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. I mean this week.